Your neighbor say, let your light shine.
Let your light shine.
It's good to be with you on this great Sunday. Several years ago, my daughter Kyla and I made plans to do a three-day hiking and camping trip into the White Mountains. We prepared for it. We got all the stuff. We planned. And finally, the day of arrival came. We went up Sunday right after church. Is when we were starting. And it was one of those Sundays that just did not seem to end. It just kept on going, and I didn't get out of here till late. There was a lot of prayer, a lot of conversations, and finally we got going a couple hours later than we thought. And so we drive up to the White Mountains a few hours away, and we get to the trailhead where we're going to be hiking in and then camping out in. And so there we are, we're taking off onto the trailhead a couple hours later than what we had planned. And as we're hiking along, you can tell that the sun is setting and it's going to start to get dark pretty soon. And Kyla said to me, Dad, do you know where you're going? Of course I know where we're going. Like, have you been here before? Like, no, I haven't been here before. Where are we going to sleep? You know, all these kind of questions. Because it was getting darker and darker and darker. And we finally made the decision that we should head back to the beginning of the trailhead and try again the next day, because we were going to get stuck in the dark and we didn't have all the right stuff available at that particular moment. The impending darkness literally turned us around. Now, don't feel too bad for us. We ended up camping at some fancy hotel in North Conway. We even set the tent up in the hotel room to send pictures to my wife to make it look like we were still camping. We ate the food that we had brought with us in our backpacks, on our cooking equipment that we had brought as well. We even found a local pond to go swimming in called the hotel pool. But the reality of that trip was that the darkness changed what we were going to do. It literally changed what we were going to do because it was going to get dark. Today, we are going to explore the 9th of 10 plagues experienced by Egypt in the book of Exodus. It's the plague of darkness. Now, if you don't know the story, Moses was chosen by God. Moses was a man chosen by God to set Hebrew slaves free from 400 years of Egyptian captivity. And there's been this back and forth between the leader of Egypt, Pharaoh, and him for quite some time. Exodus chapter 10, verse 21. Then the Lord said to Moses, lift your hand toward heaven, and the land of Egypt will be covered with a darkness so thick you can feel it. So Moses lifted his hands into the sky, and a deep darkness covered the entire land of Egypt for 3 days. During all that time, the people could not see each other, and no one moved. But there was light as usual where the people of Israel lived. Finally, Pharaoh called for Moses. Go and worship the Lord, he said, but leave your flocks and herds here. You may even take your little ones with you. No, Moses said. You must provide us with animals for sacrifices and burnt offerings to the Lord our God. All our livestock must go with us, too. Not a hoof can be left behind. We must choose our sacrifices for the Lord our God among these animals. And we won't know how we are to worship the Lord until we get there. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart once more, and he would not let them go. Get out of here, Pharaoh shouted at Moses. I'm warning you, never come back to see me again. The day you see my face, you will die. Turns out these were some pretty unfortunate words. Very well, Moses replied. I will never see your face again. Very interesting part of the story. In verse 28, Pharaoh says, get out of here. He shouted it out to Moses. And he threatens to kill him if he ever comes back. It turns out for Pharaoh, this is Pharaoh's moment of total surrender. Somebody say total surrender. Total surrender. Pharaoh has been entertaining some type of relationship with God for the season of time. but he's been fighting it. Yet after multiple acts of disobedience, here in this moment, Pharaoh crosses a line. He becomes totally and completely surrendered, but not to God. He, in this moment, gives himself over entirely to wickedness. He has a total surrender moment, but in the wrong direction. For quite some time now, Pharaoh has been telling God to leave him alone. He's been saying to God, get out of my life, get out of my country, stop interfering, stop intervening. And it is as if now God has finally agreed to Pharaoh's terms and has agreed to let Pharaoh surrender himself to the dark side, to the enemy, to Satan. And so in this final declaration of the rejection of God's protection and God's presence, in the declaration of surrender to his satanic lord, he receives upon himself the results. He and his people, as a result of this moment, will not have any of the protections of God from the chaos of this world, from the chaos monsters that the Bible talks about. In the scriptures, there were these beasts called Leviathan or Behemoth or the dragon. In Isaiah 27, it says, in that day, the Lord will take his terrible, swift sword and punish Leviathan, the swiftly moving serpent, the coiling, writhing serpent. He will kill the dragon of the sea. It turns out that these beasts, these biblical monsters and creatures, they are what we call chaos monsters or demonic forces, spiritual entities. And God is actively warring against all of these chaos creatures on our behalf, you and I today. God is warring on our behalf against them, whether you realize it or not. God is at work protecting against these evil forces. And Pharaoh, at this point, says to God, no more. I don't want your protection. I don't want your presence. I'm not interested in you, God. I can handle these guys on my own. He chooses for himself in this declaration, in this moment, he chooses for himself, and because he's the leader, he chooses for his nation to invite chaos into his life and the life of his people. It's as if in this declaration, Pharaoh is saying, dear God, I would like to invite all the chaos of the natural world and supernatural world into my life. Thanks. Peace out. Right? It's like he's just saying, I got this. I'm going to do it on my own. I don't need your help. Get out of here. He literally chooses darkness over hope. It turns out he's not the only leader of a nation that has totally given himself over to darkness. It should ring a bell with you that here that we have a leader oppressing Jews and wanting to kill them. All the time being warned by God. And I believe we've seen this even in the past century. In World War II, Hitler was without a doubt a reemergence of a type of Pharaoh. He oppressed and killed the Jews all the while being warned. Yet he still gave himself completely over to darkness or wickedness. And it harmed the whole world. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 18, it says this. Their minds are full of darkness. Somebody say darkness. They wander far from the life God gives because they have closed their minds, hardened their hearts against him. They have no sense of shame. They live for lustful pleasure and eagerly practice every kind of impurity. It's an interesting idea about what darkness of the mind will do to you. In verse 21 of the passage we read today, darkness so thick you can feel it. That's some pretty serious darkness. Now, there's darkness that you experience where it's maybe a little nerve-wracking or a little scary. You're not 100% sure where you're going. But that's not the same as feeling it. Well, maybe you don't know this, but there are places in the world that are more spiritually dark than other places. And for those that are sensitive to it, they can feel the spiritual difference. They can feel the spiritual darkness or lack of it. Now, when we're talking about this idea of darkness, we're not saying here that in the text, we're not talking about the people were scared because it was dark. It means that the darkness has a very strong spiritual component to it. It says, verse 22, a deep darkness covered the entire land of Egypt for 3 days. During all the time, the people could not see each other and no one moved. If I can't see you and you can't see me when this room is dark, most of us would pull out our phone and turn on the flashlight. All right? We would just pull out a flashlight. Some electricity would help us out of the situation. But I still think, how come they just didn't light a candle? Why couldn't they see each other because of the dark? Normally when it's dark and the power goes out, you'd put on your candles. But apparently this was not just regular darkness. They could have seen by firelight, but apparently it wasn't good enough. It was as if the darkness that was taking place was the total removal of all types of light. As if God had removed His presence from the geographic space that they had. Pharaoh said, I don't want your presence. And God said, okay. This was a supernatural darkness, except where God's presence was. Throughout the scriptures, darkness often represents these moments when God pulls back His hand or His presence from a situation. In these 3 days, we see God's response to Pharaoh, which is essentially, okay, I'll let you have what you asked for. If you want unrestrained chaos of evil to show up, then okay, you can have it, but it's going to be horrible. I think that many people today live their lives in this type of darkness. They live their life in a spiritual darkness. They live in spiritual blindness. Their minds are full of darkness. But for those of you in the room today who have embraced the light and truth of Christ, your mind used to be dark, but now you have a great and glorious hope. But it required something. It required for your mind to be recreated. Our minds had previously been in darkness, and then they were created anew to be filled with hope and light and purpose. Now, that should sound familiar to you. Because if you go all the way back to the beginning, Genesis chapter 1, the earth was formless and empty, and darkness covered the deep waters. And yet, in the midst of this darkness at this particular moment, there was hope. It goes on, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the surface of the waters. Then God said, let there be light. And there was light. And friends, that's exactly what happens to us. Our minds are in darkness. Yet the Spirit of God hovers over us and around us. And when we call out to God, in a moment God says, let there be light. And your mind is recreated and pulled out of darkness. So back to Egypt, darkness is everywhere. Day one, dark. Day two, dark. Day three, dark. Despair is starting to set in. Yet during this entire time, there was light in a little place called Goshen. Goshen is the name of the place where the slaves live, where the Israelites live. In verse 23, it says, but there was light as usual where the people of Israel lived. What I want you to hear about that is that the light in Goshen was still evidence, even in Egypt, that there was hope. It was evidence that there was a shot, there was hope still happening. And now during this time, I can only imagine that all the people of Egypt, all the people that were geographically close enough to see the light of Goshen, you know what they would have done for 3 days? They would have stared at Goshen, because that's where the light was. And when you live in darkness, pay attention to this, when you live in darkness and you see light in the distance, you are drawn to the light. Even if you don't understand it, you are drawn to it. Even if you're not sure what's going on, you're drawn to it. Even if you make fun of it, you're still drawn to it. Without God, a person can feel the hopelessness and the despair and the darkness, and they know that something is missing, especially when they can see light in somebody else. They know there's a chance, there's a hope, there's a possibility. People that are living in Egypt, but they can see Goshen in your life. And the light of Christ in your life brings hope to those around. Even if they don't understand what's going on, they are drawn to it. 2 Corinthians 4 says this, Satan, who is the god of this world, has blinded the minds of those who don't believe. They are unable to see the glorious light of the good news. They don't understand the message about the glory of Christ, who is the exact likeness of God. Their minds, their spiritual eyes are blinded. They're prevented from seeing the light of Christ. Our hearts should break at the darkness that people live in. When people live in darkness, we should be filled with compassion for them and not judgment. Compassion, not judgment. We should be filled with anger, yes, righteous anger, but not at the people. That doesn't make any sense. But rather, the anger should be directed at the one that is blinding them and holding them in darkness, which we just read is Satan, the god of this world. You see, when somebody is a slave, it doesn't make sense to get angry at the slave. Our anger would more appropriately be directed at the slave owner. Several years ago, my wife and I were in Granada, Nicaragua. We were looking for something significant to do with our time there. And it's a city that we knew we were going to partner with as a church to start a church in Nicaragua. And it just had its 13-year anniversary, by the way, which is a good deal. We came across the store in the downtown area that was selling things to fund an orphanage that was creatively and cleverly hid behind the store. That day, we found two elderly nuns and one young nun who were running this orphanage. Over time, we came to learn that this was actually not an orphanage. It was not funded by a church. It was not funded by the state. It had no outside money coming in. It was being funded by the store at the front. The reason that it wasn't official was because these nuns were not really regular nuns. These were like warrior nuns. They would go out at night and rescue children that were sex slaves. This orphanage we came across was not just an orphanage, it was a rescue station. Oftentimes, when these child slaves would get sick or pregnant, they would just be thrown out like garbage. And these three precious ladies would go around the city at night, into the dark places, into the forbidden places, the hopeless places, the dangerous places, and they would find these girls, they would bring them back to this children's home to protect them, to heal them, to provide for them, to educate them, to literally give them a hope and a future. Now, doesn't that sound like God? To give somebody a hope and a future? Because that's what He promises. They were literally the hands and feet of Jesus. And they still are. the light of God in a very dark and difficult place. When you think about darkness and people, the truth is that sometimes you don't choose the darkness. You're just thrown into it, or you're born into it. But if there are people around you who will be the light of Christ, you will know where you can go. Even if your whole world is dark, you can see the light. And sometimes when there are people willing to go to dark places and hard places and broken places and complicated places, sometimes the light goes into the darkness to rescue people that would have absolutely no way of getting to the light. And that, my friends, is exactly why we financially help and send people across the planet to some very dark places in our missions program. That is why we as a church have insisted on being the church that is located in the hard places. There are plenty of people willing to go to the easy places. Let them do that. We have been uniquely authorized and appointed and anointed to by God to go into the hard places and to rescue people. If you didn't know that, welcome to the team. Welcome to the team. So let me ask you today, kind of this take-home question for you. Who do you need to let your light shine for? You see, the light of Christ is in you. Who do you need to let it shine for? 2 Corinthians 4 says, you see, we don't go around preaching about ourselves. We preach that Jesus Christ is Lord. And we ourselves are your servants for Jesus' sake. For God who said, let there be light in the darkness, has made his light shine in our hearts so we could know the glory of God that is seen in the face of Jesus Christ. Just think about this. You lived in darkness. Maybe some of you still do. The Spirit of God hovers over you, calls out to you. And just like God did at the beginning of the world, he says, let there be light in your darkness. It's a powerful, powerful moment. This means that we who are part of the light, we are the visible expression of Jesus Christ. We carry the light of Christ into the darkness. Matthew chapter 4, verse 12. When Jesus heard that John had been arrested, he left Judea and returned to Galilee. He went first to Nazareth, then left there, moved to Capernaum beside the Sea of Galilee in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali. This fulfilled what God said through the prophet Isaiah. In the land of Zebulun and Naphtali, beside the sea, beyond the Jordan River in Galilee, where so many Gentiles live, the people who sat in darkness have seen a great light. And for those who lived in the land where death cast its shadow, a light has shined. From then on, Jesus began to preach, repent of your sins and turn to God, for the kingdom of heaven is near. As the worship team comes up, here in this passage, we see Jesus shining the light. Jesus shining the light where death has cast its shadow. Maybe you can relate to this idea. Maybe death has cast its shadow on you. I would encourage you then to look to the light of Jesus. If you've sat in darkness for most of your life, Jesus is your great light and your great hope. Don't miss him. Maybe you're on a journey. Maybe you've been on some type of higher power journey. And maybe the light bulb has become your higher power. Well, I'm going to tell you something. If you're higher power is a light bulb or anything like it. That power is going to break, or it's going to go out pretty soon. You see, Jesus is the only light that will not burn out. The only light that will not break. About 11 years ago, my wife and I purchased a home. I was so excited. All this modern technology. We bought these really fancy light bulbs that said they would not burn out for at least 10 years. So, we bought these expensive light bulbs, put them in. And do you know, at the 10-year mark, almost to the day, all of these light bulbs in our house went out at the same time. It lasted for a while, but then it went out. Jesus is the only light that never goes out. So friends, challenge to you today is to let your light shine. Let it shine bright. Let it shine for all the world to see. Maybe you can't think about the whole world. Let it shine bright for your house to see, for your neighbor to see, for your friend to see. Let your light shine.